good?
I was excited to come.
Okay, good. It's worth it. For the three of you, it's worth it. Okay, today we're going to try as best as possible to go through the entire Seder step by step and go through the relevant halachas of doing things correctly in the Seder. Some things may feel more appropriate for the one who's leading the Seder. Nonetheless, many of the items are applicable for everything else. Now, it's interesting. This is a custom that not everyone's so aware of, even though many have a custom to bless their children on Friday night. And it happens that the Seder is Friday night this year. But regardless of when the Seder is, there's still a custom that a father should bless his children before the Seder, just as he does on any Friday night all year long, because it's not Pesach night is no worse than a Shabbos. Matter of fact, the Torah refers to Pesach as Shabbos. And we know that on one of the very earliest Pesachs, Yitzchak, the patriarch Yitzchak, when he wanted to bless Esav, and when Yaakov got the blessing, that was none other than Pesach night. When Yaakov blessed, when Yitzchak blessed Yaakov, was on Pesach night. So there's certainly very appropriate for a father to bless the children before the Seder, no matter what night of the week the Seder comes out on. Okay, next. The actual Kiddush should be made as soon as night falls. And the preferred time for this in Thornhill is at 8:32. You could be lenient even earlier to 8:25. But you should not make Kiddush before that time. Okay, so you don't make Kiddush before that time, and you should not make Kiddush too much after that time. So this really is the ball's in your court on that. In other words, all the preparation should be such that when when it's the time to start at 8:32, we should be starting at 8:32, not at 9:15. You don't come in and say, you know, okay, now, oh, we didn't do this, we didn't do that, let's set this up, let's set that up. No, you have to start immediately at 8:32. Now, if you have, you know, problems with secular families, that's going to be all kinds of shalom bias issues, contact your local rabbi what to do. But remember, all preliminary activities can be earlier. In other words, it's the actual Kiddush can't be before 8:32. So, you know, it usually probably takes 5 minutes to find everybody finds their seat. You can sing, you know, Kadesh, Urchatz, that kind of stuff, pouring the wine. All that is preliminary. The Kiddush itself cannot be before 8:32. That's the point we're making. And the general reason that's giving is so that children who are tired will not fall asleep. You want to involve them in the Seder. So you want to, so it goes both ways. You can't do it too early. And you shouldn't do it too late. Obviously, the second night will be different because you need time to prepare it. But the first night, you should try to start as on time as possible. And that depends on how well things are set up. Okay, so as we make the Kiddush, the matzah should be covered during the Kiddush. And the rule throughout the Seder is the matzahs are generally uncovered throughout the entire Seder when we're reciting the Maggid, except when the wine is held. So that's the rule. When the wine is held, the matzahs are covered. When not, the matzahs are uncovered. Okay. The leader of the Seder should not pour his own cup, but another person should pour for him. And some have the custom that no one pours their own cup, because everybody is to be treated as royalty, and royalty does not pour their own cup. So that's one of the ways that you show that you're royalty. When it comes to making Kiddush, and there's multiple people at the Seder, what do you do? So there's different custom as to who recites the Kiddush. One custom is the leader recites the leader of the Seder recites the Kiddush and everybody else listens. Or each head of the household, if there's a number of households there, recites the Kiddush and their family members listen. Or everyone recites the Kiddush together, including the women and the children. So you could do any one of those three, but don't mix and match. You stay with one consistent custom, either one or the leaders or everybody. But be that as it may, whether you make the Kiddush or not, point six, all the participants should have their own cup of wine and hold it during the Kiddush, whether they are listening or reciting it. Either way, everybody holds their cup of Kiddush. Okay, now, it's preferable to use red wine. The reason for that, it's we know in the Beis HaMikdash, when they brought wine libations, the Talmud says that red wine is the preferred wine. It is, even the Talmud were connoisseurs in wine, and red wine is a better wine. You want to use the better wine. However, if where you are, the white wine is a better quality, you could use it. It's preferable maybe just to put a touch of red wine in to give a little color that looks like a red wine. And when you do that, you should preferably pour the white wine into the red wine when mixing it on Yontif. In other words, you don't want to color the wine. So in other words, if you want white wine and you want it to look red, put a little red wine first, and then the white wine goes in, as opposed to the white wine and then the red wine, because then it looks like you're coloring the wine, and there could be some problems with that. But again, if you really don't like red wine, it's very distasteful for you, certainly you could use white wine, because you will not enjoy the Seder. Sparkling wine is also acceptable, it tastes like wine. If you cannot tolerate even weak wine, you could use grape juice.
Should you really try?
Well, what does really try mean? In other words, how harmful is it?
Well, like if you really don't enjoy it, you force yourself, or you can just hold
well, it. You know, you could. What I suggest is these, if you take these very low alcohol sweet wines, sure. They're very good. Yeah. Like that, or a Moscato, something like that. They're pretty sweet, and they're not so, I personally do not like dry wine at all. I can't, my palate just doesn't enjoy it. So I take a sweet wine, which I enjoy more. But if you really, grape juice doesn't taste so much different than a very low alcohol Moscato. It's almost the same. So you should try for wine. It is the better way. If you really can't take it, if you get headaches from wine, if you're going to feel nauseous from it, okay, if it's not your favorite, again, it's still better to take the wine than the grape juice. I mean, the Talmud relates, and not that you have to do this at all, there was a rabbi in the Talmud who really did not deal well with wine, but he drank it anyway and had a headache until Shavuos. But we're not asking you to do that, obviously. But if it's just, okay, you know, you like grape juice better, but, you know, you can definitely tolerate a wine, then better to have the wine. Now, the Kiddush cup must be able to contain at least 3 fluid ounces. However, on Friday night, where Kiddush is a biblical obligation, as this year the first night is, it must contain at least 4.5 fluid ounces. And you'd be surprised, some of these nice small Kiddush cups do not have 4.5 ounces. So you must measure them before Shabbos to make sure that they contain at least 4.5 fluid ounces. When the Kiddush is being recited, we should have in mind to fulfill 2 mitzvahs, the mitzvah of Kiddush and the mitzvah of drinking the first of the 4 cups of wine. When we make the Shecheyanu Bracha, now ladies may make the Shecheyanu Bracha when they're lighting candles, but if you make the Shecheyanu then you don't make a Shecheyanu again. And when saying the Shecheyanu blessing, one should have in mind that it applies to the holiday and all the mitzvahs of the Seder that you are going to do. Now, how much of the cup do you have to drink? So again, ideally, one should drink the entire cup. And that's why you shouldn't have too large a cup. Not these huge wine glasses that are 8 to 12 ounces. It's not ideal to have large cups, although it looks fancy. You really want a cup that's around 4.5, 5 ounces. And that is going to be the ideal. And then you can ideally drink the entire cup if that is possible. If it's not possible, it's sufficient to drink the majority of the cup. And that's why we're saying it's better to use a smaller kosher minimum quantity cup. Because then taking a majority of that is only about 3 ounces or 2.5 ounces or something like that. So you don't have to drink too much wine. Now, there's some people who really love wine, but not everybody does, or not everyone can tolerate it so well. So therefore, a smaller kosher cup and a minimum of the majority of that cup. Now, it's preferable that that cup, the drinking should be done without pausing. Just drink it straight. If it's not possible, we can have one short pause. If that's not possible, whatever, you still have to drink it within 4 minutes. No one takes 4 minutes to drink it, but that's the maximum. Now, again, a general rule for the entire Seder, men are obliged to recline on their left side when drinking wine and doing other mitzvahs. Even a left-handed person still drinks reclining on their left side. And if one did not recline while drinking the first cup, and then you realize after that you don't have to re-drink the first cup. Women are not obliged to recline, period. And the custom is women don't recline. That's the custom. If you have a woman who mamish insists on it, okay. But the custom is women do not recline and men do recline. Now, after you've drunk the first cup of wine, and from the first cup of wine to the second cup of wine, it's going to be a long time, and let's say you're thirsty, you may drink drinks as long as they're non-alcoholic beverages, because if you drink, let's say, more wine, it looks like you're adding to the four cups, which you're not allowed to do. So this is Kadesh. Okay. Now, by the way, it's customary, I didn't mention it, that before every step of the Seder, the leader of the Seder announces it. So he says, Kadesh, and then we go into making the Kiddush. Next is Urchatz, washing the hands. Yes, ma'am.
Rabbi, is it just for sneeze reasons that women don't recline?
Yeah, it's part of it. It's part of it. Certain things women don't do. So reclining, yeah. Urchatz, washing the hands. At this point, everybody washes their hands exactly as you would wash your hands before eating bread and matzah, except you do not make a blessing. The reason for the washing of the hands, in the days of the Talmud, when people were very meticulous about the purity of their hands and the purity of the foods that they ate, and there's all kinds of complicated laws of ritual impurity, and in those days, you know, it was possible to contract ritual impurity of your hands, and when you dipped things in a liquid, it could make the vegetables or fruits impure. So they washed their hands before that. That's when we had a Beis HaMikdash. We don't have a Beis HaMikdash anymore, but we still are particular to be stringent on that area, which we don't do a whole year long, but to show that we're doing everything in the most stringent way possible on Pesach. On Pesach, we want to do it the best way possible. And there really is some technical laws, which we haven't gotten into, but certain dippings that people dip certain vegetables in liquids, there is a halacha that one maybe should, it's a debate, if one should wash their hands before that, even though we generally don't, but on Pesach we do for that reason. And you wash your hands. The custom is the leader of the Seder washes his hand by the seat of the table and does not leave. And that's a good thing to train your children to bring a nice cup with a bowl, the father, the mother, whoever, and they wash at the table and they don't leave the table. Now, again, you have to be careful because the big mistake is that people usually make the bracha because they're used to making a bracha after washing their hands. So you have to really take care. But even though you're not making a bracha, the same rule, though, applies. You cannot talk after washing your hands until you eat the karpas. So even though you're not eating bread, even though you're not making a bracha, you still cannot talk after washing for this karpas unless the talking is related to performing the mitzvah of the karpas. Like you could say, oh, where's the salt water or something like that. So that is the Urchatz. Karpas, the third section, eating the vegetable. Yes?
Can I just ask you, what's the reason why we don't leave the table to wash, but on Friday nights we do?
Well, again, it's a sign of royalty. We're trying to show as much as possible we live as royalty. A king does not leave the table to wash.
Okay.
So we're doing a lot of things to show that we are of a royal nature. And certainly the head of the Seder is representing that more than anyone else. So therefore, it's, again, don't have to, but it's a good training. Children should know to do that, to bring it, you know, bring the cup and the bowl and the towel and everything. Mm-hmm. That is an optimal way to do this. Okay, what vegetable is used for the karpas? The most commonly used vegetables are celery, a sweet radish, cabbage, parsley, whatever has to be inspected for bugs should be inspected. Some use a potato. It depended a lot on the nature of where people lived. In Poland, they only had potatoes. So they used potatoes, but other places could have used other vegetables. The only vegetable you cannot use is lettuce, because lettuce is a form of moror. So you don't want to take anything that could be misconstrued as a moror. So usually celery is a good option. Okay, now everyone takes a small piece of the celery, less than 30 cc's. Why is that so? So would not require a bracha achrona on this. Now, since we are washing our hands, and as I said, the washing of the hands was in the days of worry about impurity, where if you had your hand and you had a vegetable and you dipped it into a liquid, that would require washing, but it only requires washing if your hands are touching the vegetable. So we have people who are very pedantic, and they say, I'm going to take a fork and put their fork into the celery, and then with the fork, dip it in. That is a contradiction in and of itself. Because if you're not touching the vegetable, you don't have to wash your hand. It's only a law if you're holding the vegetable. So therefore, you got to take the karpas in your fingers, or else there's no point of washing your hands at all. Okay? Then you dip it into the salt water, and everybody makes the bracha borei pri ha'adamah on the karpas. And when you make that bracha, you have also in mind the moror that will be eaten later in the Seder, which also is a fruit of the ground, and therefore you don't have to make a bracha on the moror. There's questionable whether you have to make a blessing on the moror at that point of the Seder, and therefore if you have in mind the karpas, it works. Men are not obliged to recline when eating the karpas, but they can if they want to. And the prevalent custom is to eat it without reclining. Why? Because the karpas, no matter what interpretation you have, is the custom for the karpas. It doesn't remind us of pleasant things. Okay? Karpas is an acronym for the idea that the 600,000 Jews had backbreaking work. The word karpas alludes to that, so that's not a pleasant thing. You're dipping it in salt water, that alludes to the tears of the Jewish people. That's not a pleasant thing. Others say that the karpas is symbolic of the very first dipping that happened in Jewish history, and that's when the brothers dipped the blood of Yosef's coat into the blood, which caused the Jews to have to go down to Egypt, which is also not a pleasant thing. So karpas is not one of the happiest parts of the Seder, so we wouldn't recline for that, as it doesn't remind us of happy things. Okay, and again, I didn't mention it, but it's clear. The master of the service who has a Seder plate, whoever has a Seder plate, you're taking that karpas off the kara, because that's what you're using it for. That's what you put it there for. While others, you get the other little karpuses, okay? Plural of karpas, karpuses. Okay. Now, the remaining karpas, let's say you had a nice bowl of karpas, can be removed from the table. Pesach tables usually tend to be overcrowded, so they can just be there for that little time. Now, some have a custom to leave a piece of karpas on the Seder plate until the meal. But, you know, let's say you have a couple pieces of karpas on your Seder plate, you take one and leave them. That's some, but not everybody. And the salt water can also be removed. You don't need it anymore. Because, as you know, in other words, most people have the challenge, there's too many things on the Seder table, and it becomes a big mess. And when that happens, you know what happens next. Wine gets spilled. That always happens. There's too many things on the table, and trying to move something, you're spilling the wine. So, therefore, only put on the table what you need at the table. So, let's say, you know, I would not necessarily put all the matzo you're going to eat for the Seder all at the table in the beginning. Rather, you have the table, you got your karpas, you got your salt water all over. That could take a place on the table. And if you don't, once it's done, remove it so there'll be more room for other things for the Seder. Next, yachatz. We break the middle matzah. The middle matzah is broken into two uneven pieces. The smaller piece is returned to the Seder plate or the matzah cover. And the larger one is wrapped in a cloth and put aside for the afikoman. The simple explanation for that is we also, not only are we remembering that we are free people who are doing things in a luxurious fashion, but and we're royalty, but we're also remembering that we were slaves. That's the mixed message of the Seder. We started the evening as slaves in Egypt, and we left as free people. So one of the aspects of the matzah is clearly not the food of a free of a wealthy person. It's the bread of affliction. And therefore, when the Jews were slaves, the way of a slave is that when you receive your bread ration for the day, you eat a little of it now, and you save most of it for later. So that's what we're doing here, too. We're breaking the afikoman in two. We are putting one part on the table, a smaller part, and leaving the bigger part on the plate for later. Okay, now that smaller piece that you're, now this is where you really should, this is the advantage of having a hand matzah versus a machine matzah. Because that smaller piece you're going to use later when you're going to be doing the mitzvah of eating matzah, and you have to have a minimal size for this. So therefore, you have to have that smaller piece should be the least the size of 25 grams, which a smaller piece will not be 25 grams if it's a machine matzah. So that's why the hand matzahs are practical for that, because you're going to see in a minute what the measurements of what you got to eat for that matzah. So therefore, it's saying it's better, not obligatory, but much better to have a large hand matzah for that middle matzah. Okay, and it's a custom for the children. Now you put that away, and it's a custom for the children to take the afikoman, and they hide it away when the leader's not watching. And the simple reason, why is some, my son is sending me a FaceTime. Okay, he doesn't know I'm giving a class right now. All right, and that keeps the children awake. That's the simple reason, that have motivation for keep them up for the rest of the Seder. If there are no little children, you still hide the afikoman. It is still taken and bartered for later, regardless.
To keep the adults awake.
Keep the adults awake. And that's the stakes are much higher for redeeming the afikoman when an adult takes it. Okay. Now we are ready for the Magid, relating the story of the Haggadah. Before beginning the narrative of the Haggadah, one should have in mind that they are fulfilling the mitzvah. It's a biblical mitzvah of relating the story of the Exodus from Egypt. As the end of the Haggadah says, every Jew has to personify on the night of the Seder that one is actually leaving Egypt. So that is, and the means is through the Haggadah. Now, very important point. The mitzvah is not fulfilled by mere recital of the Haggadah if the words are not understood. Okay, it's not just a question of reading pages. If you're not familiar with the Hebrew, you should be either spending time studying it so you understand what it means in order to have a meaningful experience, or even if to say it in English. Right, it's better to read in a language you understand than to read it in Hebrew and not understand it at all. So if you have many guests who have no idea what the Hebrew is all about, read it in English. This is not like, you know, Shmon Esrei in a Siddur. It's not like the Kriya Shema, where we're very particular. It should be in Hebrew because all the spiritual energies that are activated in prayer really come from the Hebrew letters. The Haggadah, remember, the very first Seder in Jewish history, there was no Haggadah. When the Jews were in Egypt, there was no Haggadah. Even the second year in the desert when they celebrated Pesach, there was no Haggadah. They didn't need a Haggadah. They just told the story. You know, imagine you have a Holocaust survivor speaking to Steven Spielberg. They don't have a Haggadah reading the story of their lives in the Holocaust. They're just telling the story. So really, the question is just to tell the story. If you really were good at it, you don't need a Haggadah. The rabbi saw that people, you know, weren't as skilled anymore as the years passed. So they created the Haggadah to enable people to have a guidelines as to what are the main ideas that should be spoken about. But if you're just going to read and don't understand what's going on, you have absolutely not fulfilled the mitzvah. And the whole point is for people to feel that experience. And therefore, the leader has to make sure that everyone understands at least the most essential sections of the narrative. In other words, you know, if you have all kinds of different seders. You have the leader who knows Hebrew and wants to say it in Hebrew and loves saying it in Hebrew. Let's say they're an Israeli or whatever. And then they have guests who don't understand Hebrew. So then you have to figure a healthy balance between them. But some people must, some parts, everyone must know. And point five tells us what the most important parts are. The most important sections of the narrative are the 10 plagues. And from the section that begins, Rabbi Gamliel Omer. Rabbi Gamliel used to say, whoever does not say these three things has not fulfilled the mitzvah of telling over the Seder, Pesach, Matzah, and Moror. From that part on till the second cup, you cannot skip it all. And the 10 plagues cannot be skipped. But the other parts could. And again, if you're in a rush, let's say you spend a lot of time on the first five pages of the Maggid, and then your husband spent all the time, and then you nudge your husband, you know, it's already 11:30, dear. So he could just turn 15 pages and go to Rabbi Gamliel, okay, and just move on to that. That is acceptable as well. But therefore, even women who, let's say, go out in there in the kitchen in the olden days, and it's not the same now, but when I was a kid, you know, the ladies of the house, they were in the kitchen the whole time. That's what they didn't have all the modern conveniences you have. Life was a lot different, not only 50 years ago. Life was much different. You didn't have all these blenders and all these things, and they really was a chore, and they couldn't get everything ready before the Seder. They just couldn't. It wasn't possible. So remember, they were still plucking the feathers off the chicken, still salting the meat. You guys don't even know what that is. I mean, you know it, but you don't do that. I remember still coming home on a Thursday night, seeing the board with the meat and the blood going down the thing. You guys are going, oh, I had to go to Sobeys today. Oh, I spent an hour and a half getting the stuff. You know, our mothers, after they went to Sobeys, they got the stuff. Then they were plucking the chickens and they were salting the meat and all these things. And you expect them to have it all ready in time for the Seder? And, you know, they didn't have refrigerators and freezers to freeze everything 3 weeks in advance. So you bought the meat, had to be fresh and had to be served. So everything was done a day or two before. So quite often, you know, they were struggling to get that meal ready in time for Shulchan Aruch. So it wasn't, you know, I don't mean to denigrate the women. They were Eishes Chayils, and they had to put together a much more difficult show with much less resources. And also, they didn't have that much money either. So when you don't have money, you don't have nannies to do things and all those other things. So therefore, many of the women, they were busy in the kitchen, really making sure the meal was ready, but they still had to be called in for these important parts. So that's why you could see the etymology, the evolution of halacha. When I was a young kid, they always said, it's very important to call the wives in at the Seder's point. You don't find this in Haggadahs, in Halacha anymore, because no woman has to be in the kitchen. But it still was something, and that it's a primary thing to realize. There's certain main parts that must be said. Now, point six, everyone can either read the Haggadah or listen to the leader, as long as we understand what's being said. Most people follow the custom to recite the Haggadah if they are fluent in Hebrew. Okay. The leader of the Seder, once he breaks that matzah, he takes the broken middle matzah while saying the words, Halach Ma'anya, this is the bread of affliction. He picks up the matzah. Here it is. He shows it to everyone on the table. Now, the Seder plate after that, after Halach Ma'anya, this one, people forget this one, the Seder plate containing the matzahs at this point should be removed from the table or at least moved away from the leader after saying Halach Ma'anya, as if to show we're putting the food away, we're not eating any food right now, which was going to, of course, the kids are going to ask questions, why are we doing that? And then the second cup is filled, and at that point, the youngest child who's capable of asking the Manishtana says the Manishtana. If the child is hesitant to do it, certainly the parents can help him. Even if there are no children present, someone has to ask the four questions. Even if you're alone at a Seder, you ask yourself the four questions. If it's a husband and wife, the wife or any other participant asks the four questions. The whole Haggadah has to be in a question and answer format. Now, also, in the olden days, the little kids asked the Manishtana, and then the parents put the kids to bed. And that is really counterintuitive, because if a child asks a question, they're supposed to get an answer. And when the children are learning to say the Manishtana, you know, again, depending on what kind of training they've received, They may not even realize they're asking questions. They may just think they're making a presentation. So like in the school, they sing songs. I said the Manishtana. No, you ask the Manishtana. You got to make sure that they understand what they're asking. You can maybe say, like, what are you saying? Well, I don't know, I'm just saying these words. No, what are you asking? So they have to really understand they're asking a question, and they deserve to get an answer. And the story of the Magid is the answer in detail. Okay, so when they finish the Manishtana, the Seder plate comes back. It's interesting, it's an interesting custom. Young women who are looking for a shidduch should be the ones to remove and bring back the Seder plate. There's all kinds of gematrias alluding to that. So if you want to give someone the honor, someone wants a shidduch, go let them do that. And then we go through the story in detail. Now, at this point, you do not recline during the narrative, because you should be sitting with awe and respect as you're relating the greatness of Hashem. So that's not a place to be reclining. Okay, I'm not going to go through the whole Haggadah. We do know that there are 16 drops of wine are spilt during the enumeration of the 10 plagues and the accompanying text, and it comes out to 16 times. Now, again, the most correct custom to spill the wine is with the index finger, not the pinky. I don't know why everyone uses the pinky. It's the index finger, because we're told that God took us out with the etzpa Elohim, the finger, not the pinky. This in Hebrew is called your etzpa, the pointing finger. So we use the pointing finger for that, not the pinky. I didn't see any source for that. If a person's very, grossed out by putting their finger in their wine, okay, you can just tilt the cup and spill it out. You're going to probably lose a little wine from the full cup that you started with. So before you get to Rabban Gamliel, you refill the cups as necessary. When you get to Rabban Gamliel, and he says we have to talk about Pesach, Matzah, and Moror. So when you talk about matzahs, this matzah we eat, you pick up the matzah. When we talk about the Moror, you pick up the Moror. But when you talk about the Pesach, the Korban Pesach, you don't pick up the shank bone. It might look that you're declaring it as holy meat to be eaten in the temple, which we don't want that to happen. But you look at the shank bone. So Pesach, you look at the shank bone. Matzah, you pick up the matzah more, you pick up the more. Then you make the appropriate blessings. You drink the second cup of wine while reclining. And here is the important one to remember. Of all the cups of wine, if a man did not recline, he doesn't have to drink it over. But this one, he does. The second cup, if he does not recline, when he drinks that cup, he has to drink another cup without another bracha, but he drinks another cup. Okay, at this point in the game, the leader has to be very on the ball, because we're now going to do rachza, motzi, matzah all at the same time. And often people don't know what to do, and you need to give instructions. The problem is going to be, after you wash your hands, you can't give any instructions. So the leader should make sure to give all the necessary instructions before we come to this next part, so everyone will know what they're supposed to do. So rachza, we wash your hands like you normally do, but this time you recite the bracha of Al Netilas Yadayim. Again, you'd have the leader would customary not leave the table, and the water is brought to him. The leader should make the announcement that no one can speak after the washing of hands, really, until after Korech. Really, this should not be a social hour. You know what tends to happen. You eat the matzah, the first bite of the matzah is a whole discussion about how the matzahs taste. Right? It's not appropriate for that time, for that. You are engaged in doing the most important mitzvah of the year. You should be focused on doing the mitzvah and not discussing matzahs. You could do that during the meal. You could discuss the matzahs. But your job, it's really just a very quiet, and the only sound you hear is lots of crunching. That's what's going on. So it tends to break down a little bit. I'm just being optimally, that's why the leader should announce, we are now going to do the most important mitzvah, well, the second, the most important mitzvah was telling over the story. But now we're going to make it real by eating the matzah and eating the morah and eating the korach. And we have to have kavanah when we're doing that. And that doesn't happen when you're saying, oh, Ma, the spelt matzah tastes great. Oh, those matzah are burnt. I like burnt ones. I like soft ones. I like crunchy ones. You know, that's the Yetzer Hara taking you off task. The whole point of the mitzvah of eating the matzah, the Zohar calls matzah is the bread of faith, bread of healing. If, let's say, a person is not well and he takes medications, he doesn't talk while he takes the medication. The matzah is the medication that will heal your soul. So you have to have kavana. You have to have in mind with every bite that you're chewing that you are fulfilling the mitzvah. It should have all your focus and all your attention with all the holy thoughts one should have when one is eating matzah. Now, that's beyond the nature of this class to talk about that. If you want to know that, we have online right on the homepage. You click on Seder, Pesach, all the classes I've given over the years. And it explains, you know, why we're eating the matzah, what we've been thinking about. I have a class called Why Are Matzahs Round? It's a half an hour class. You can listen to that. That's what you should be thinking about when you're eating the matzah, eating the korek, all these things. It should not be a discussion time. The Maggid was a good time to discuss issues of the Exodus and this and that and freedom and all those things. But at this point, after from Rochza till the end of korek, just eat. That's it. You'll notice how interesting a table it is when all you hear is and that kind of stuff. Okay, so that's what he has to say. Unless it's concerning the mitzvahs. If you got to say, can you pass me? Yeah, can you pass me the mora? Can you pass me the charoses? That's fine. But like idle talk, that's what we're saying should not be done. Okay, so now what happens, again, before you wash, because you want to reduce all the time in between the brachas. Everyone's going to have to eat, optimally, 25 grams of matzah. Okay, 25 grams of matzah. I know I put, look at point 12. An average hand matzah is between 50 to 80 grams, and a machine matzah is 30 grams. But just to give you some idea. So, you know, so you're supposed to have 25 grams, that's 5/6 of a machine matzah. It's almost a whole machine matzah. 25 grams is about a third of a hand matzah. All right? So now, that's how much you have to eat. You have to eat a minimal amount for that to be considered an eating. So therefore, the best thing would be, before you're leaving the table to wash and all that, you go around and you give everybody 25 grams of matzah that they're going to need for eating of the matzah. Now, you're going to give them a little bit from the leader's matzah, but they're going to have the main thing that children don't have to eat so much. You can give them 10 grams of matzah. If people are not well, we can be more lenient with them on the 25 grams. But that's what you really should be eating. Okay, so now that you got that ready, so when the leader comes out and makes the bracha, everyone's got matzah right there. Instead of now, you have 12 people to seder, now you got to dish out 12 portions of 25 grams of matzah. That takes a lot of time. So all that time should be spent before you wash the hands, so you can move quickly from washing into the motzi, the matzah. Okay, and then before you start, after all that, now you announce rochza, motzi, matzah, all three in advance. And again, okay, now, that, now, the next part is mostly, now, the matzah eaten for the various mitzvah seder must be shmura matzahs, okay? For the mitzvahs that you have, it could be a hand or machine shmura matzah, doesn't matter. But as I said, it's preferable for the handmade because it has a larger quantity and you're able to get the mitzvahs done with that matzah. Okay, the leader of the seder should have in mind to include everyone with the blessings that he makes. Everyone else should have in mind to fulfill their mitzvah of listening to his blessings. And everyone has in mind that they want to fulfill the mitzvah of eating matzah on the first night of Pesach. And that also the bracha you're making on the matzah will apply to the korech you're having later and the afikoman you're having later as well. And men have to recline when eating the matzah. Okay. Now, this next part is the trickiest part, and only the leader has to know it, but you got to make sure the leader does it right. So now the matzahs have to be covered when you say the motzi. Now remember, how many matzahs do you got now under your matzah cover at this point in the game?
Two and a half.
Two and a half. Top one is full, middle one is broken, third one is whole. So now, he's going to make first a brach of hamotzi lechem min haaretz, as you make on all bread. So when he's doing that, he has to be holding all three matzahs. All three matzahs. Why? Because you have to have Lecha Mishnah. Lecha Mishnah is two matzahs that are not broken. So the top isn't broken and the bottom one isn't broken as you make the motzi. All right? Then after you make the motzi, then you release the bottom matzah, and now the remaining two matzahs are left for the second blessing, the top one being a full matzah, the second one being a broken matzah, and you make the bracha of al achilas matzah. And at that point, ideally, the leader should break both matzahs simultaneously, okay? And the leader should take 15 grams from the top matzah and 15 grams from the middle matzah and eat both pieces together, from the broken and the middle. That's the ideal way. Takes a lot of thought to make sure you do that properly, okay? Now, everyone else who already has a 25-gram piece should be given a little bit of matzah from the top matzah, in addition to what was having there, and then they eat from that. Follow? So everybody's got 25 grams of matzah already. The leader takes, the two are broken. He takes about 15 grams from top and bottom, and then what's left from the top, most likely, you give out to everybody else a little bit, and now everybody just eats, and there's silence. Okay? And the main custom is not to dip the matzah in salt. Some do, but most don't. Now, you got to eat the matzah as quickly as possible, and preferably in no more than 2 minutes, because that's the smallest time to make sure it's considered one big eating. That's difficult. It could be 4 minutes. There's some even lenient to 9 minutes, but that's awfully lenient. But here's an important rule that makes it easy. You think, oh, that's so hard. The clock doesn't start, the two-minute clock doesn't start, until you swallow the first piece of matzah. So the trick is, you start chewing and chewing and putting more matzah in. I mean, you don't want them to go, you know, like crazy, but you know, you don't want to just take a little piece and just swallow the first piece. Once you swallow the first little piece, the clock starts. But if you take, okay, you could take a number of bites, and chew it and chew it and chew it. And then when you swallow, you can see you could maybe have like 10 to 15 grams already have been swallowed, and now there's not much left on the clock. So, and obviously, we don't want to eat in a state of frenzy or like you're, you know, wolfing down the food. It should be done in dignity and in joy as you're fulfilling the mitzvah of Hashem. And, of course, you could drink a little water to facilitate the swallowing. So that makes it a lot easier as well. So, therefore, it's really not a place to talk, you see, because you're trying to beat the clock. And that's some things you would want to mention to everybody. And then you just wait till you finish. Now, if a man forgets to recline when he eats the matzah, guess what? You got to eat another 30 grams of matzah while reclining. Okay? But no blessing is said. So again, so you want to be careful that they are reclining. Okay? Then we move on. And again, it shouldn't be frivolous talk. We move on to the moror, where you're eating the bitter herb. And the main custom is to use romaine lettuce is the main one, or iceberg lettuce, or grated horseradish. We got to make sure they've been checked for bugs. Horseradish never should be eaten whole. You're going to kill yourself. And you cannot use commercially processed horseradish. It's absolutely not allowed for moror. You could have it later on with your gefilte fish, but not for moror. How much is the size for these? So the size, again, you should have something that like is pre-measured, like either a little piece of paper. If you're using leaves, it has to be an area of 8 by 10, which is about a sheet of paper. If you're using stalks, it's an area of 3 by 5. If you're using horseradish, it's 27 cc's, which is just about the size of a schnapps glass, a little smaller than that. Or if that's hard, a 17 cc's, which is a heaping teaspoon. You can also combine two types of moror if you want. In other words, you want to have a little bit of lettuce and a little bit of horseradish, which might be a pragmatic way. Because again, now you all are wondering, if moror is supposed to be bitter, why do we use lettuce? It's not bitter. So the answer is, you know why it's not bitter? Because the people that produce the lettuce know to pick it before it becomes bitter. If you leave the lettuce in the ground longer, it becomes bitter. And that's exactly what the slavery was. In the beginning, it was sweet. Then it turned bitter because we hung around there too long. So although what you're eating isn't bitter, but to have in mind that it would become bitter later than it is. So that's the advantage of that, while the horseradish is bitter from the get-go. So many just combine and use aleve and horseradish, etc., etc.
Is there no preference?
I'm sorry?
Is there no preference?
My ears aren't working.
Is there no preference?
The preference is romaine lettuce. The Talmud puts that down as the number one. But again, there's nothing wrong with throwing in a little bit of... that's why I like to do both. You know, I have a big leaf of romaine lettuce, and I'll put in a nice amount of the grated horseradish, so I'll feel it there. Now, again, in Poland, they didn't have vegetables. There's no such thing as lettuce. So all they had was the grated horseradish. And my mother relates when she was a little girl at the table, her father gave everyone, even the little girls, a jigger of romaine, of horseradish, and she was crying. And he said, "You're supposed to cry. You have to know how it felt to be in Egypt. That's part of it. It should be a little bit painful." Okay. Well, we're a weaker generation, but anyway. And then we dip some of the more into the charoses. And since it's a dipping, the charoses should be diluted a bit with wine. It shouldn't be a thick paste, such a thick paste, because how do you dip? It's not like dipping, so it's got to be a little liquidy. So if the charoses dried out a little bit during the Seder, put a little more wine or grape juice in this. And then even though you dip it, yeah, again, it's a common mistake. Some people say, "Oh, but I don't really like the mora," so they take the lettuce and they unearth a huge chunk of charoses, and the charoses becomes the main taste of there. That's not the way it's supposed to be. Really, you dip it into the charoses, and then you shake off most of the charoses, and just leave a little bit of charoses in there. And the custom is for us to recite, everyone recites the bracha al achilas moror, and you should be thinking that you're fulfilling the mitzvah of eating moror. And this blessing works for the karach as well. And obviously, since it's a bitter experience, we do not recline when eating the mar. Okay, now we go to the sandwich. And again, all the while, hopefully, we're keeping ourselves focused on doing the mitzvah, because according to Hillel, the real mitzvah of eating maror is together with the matzah. So now we got only one matzah left, and that's the bottom matzah from the leader's perspective. And he uses that for korech. And since that's not sufficient for everybody else, you pass some up to others. And this one, you don't have to have as much matzah. 15 grams of matzah is enough. So therefore, for a machine matzah, that would really be a half of a machine matzah. And everyone should be given a piece, 15 grams. And again, you're going to give everybody a little bit of your piece. And you eat, you put some moror in as well. The same amount of moror that you used before, used for korech. You dip the mora in the charoses again, and the custom is to make the sandwich. You're putting the mora in between the two pieces of matzah. You don't make a bracha, but we say the phrase Zecher L'Migdash Kehillel. We remember that this is what Hillel did in the Beis HaMikdash. And again, you're going to eat the korech in as quickly as possible. Again, preferably 2 minutes. And again, the measured time is the same time when you begin to swallow the mora and the matzah together. Okay, and for this we do recline, because there's matzah as well, and if you forget to recline here, you do not have to eat it again.
Do the women have to recline as well?
Women never have to recline. You're free from reclining. Done. Okay, we move now on. Now at this point in the game, you've already had about 45 grams of matzah. So if you're looking at a machine matzah, you've had a machine matzah and a half. You've had two big chunks of lettuce. Shouldn't be too, and you had 2 cups of wine already. Shouldn't be too hungry. And really, Shulchan Aruch, although we have a festive meal, is generally not to be an eating fest. Sorry to say, the least important part of the Seder is the Shulchan Aruch. Well, it's really the most important part, but it depends how you treat it. Okay? So again, there's traditional foods that we eat. Again, it's not obligatory. Everything until now was obligatory. You had to have the matzah in the morning and all that. But here, the custom is to eat eggs dipped in salt water. And again, to take an egg from the Seder plate even. And one of the reasons is it reminds us of the holiday offering that we would have eaten at this time. It also reminds us that we know that the first night of Pesach comes out on the same night of the week as Tisha B'Av. So you know when Tisha B'Av is this year, it's on a Friday night, which is pushed off till Sunday. And there's no coincidence that Pesach and Tisha B'Av are the same time, because we should be having Pesach in the Beis HaMikdash, and we don't have in the Beis HaMikdash, and mourners eat eggs. And we're showing a bit of mourning by eating the egg. All other lots more reasons, that's a simple reason. Some also have the custom to eat fish. Fish is a very spiritual food. And the only thing you can't eat is anything that is roasted. So you can't have poultry or meat that's prepared with no liquid. You cannot have that. Roasted, barbecue, broiled, unless you have some liquid. So you have a pot roast and there's liquid in the pot, then it's okay. But just to be roasting chicken, barbecue chicken per se, should not be served. We don't serve barbecue foods. We do not eat the shank bone tonight, because it might make an appearance of eating something that was part of the Korban Pesach. Here's the most important law of all, number five. One should not eat excessively. Okay, the whole point is to show that you're a free person. A free person is not a glutton. And obviously, you eat a lot, and there's a lot of carbs going into the system. That's going to make you drowsy. And you won't. And really, believe it or not, there's an equally important part of the Seder is still yet to be read and sung. And it should take as much time as the first part of the Seder. Now, if you've drunken all that wine, all that matzah, and lots of foods in your system, all those carbs in the system, you're going to fall asleep. Not a good idea. And more importantly, you still have to have an appetite for the afikoman, which is another whole piece of matzah afterwards. So therefore, really, you know, if you've done the Seder properly, you've eaten the required amounts, and you've had an egg, and you've had some fish, you probably have like a small piece of meat and a small vegetable and call it a night. Because it really is, unless you got a really good big stomach, and there's going to be another matzah coming up. So really, I'm not saying you can't serve dessert and you want to have a, you know, fruit thing and all those things. But the real dessert is the afikoman. That's what afikoman means. So again, we're not going to regulate how you serve your meal. We can only suggest that the eating part of the meal shouldn't, unless, again, depending on your situation, you have not religious people at the table and they're looking forward to that, okay. But from a spiritual perspective, excess, more is less in this situation. Okay, you have to be careful to finish the afikoman by 1:21 a.m. Okay, and it's praiseworthy for a man to recline during the meal, but not a requirement. According to some opinions, it's a mitzvah to drink a little wine during the meal in honor of the Yom Tov as well. Okay, moving on to Tzafun. Eat the afikoman. Okay, so now we get that piece of matzah that was hidden, that larger broken piece. And now, again, he gives everybody a large piece on their own, but gives them a little piece from this one to supplement. And if possible, each person should have 30 grams of matzah again. And if it's difficult for this one, you can go down to 15 grams. We don't make a bracha on the afikoman. We have to have in mind that if we had a Beis HaMikdash, we'd be eating a part of the Paschal offering at this point in time. It would be a good piece of sheep, roasted sheep, goat, sheep meat. But instead we're eating a matzah. Men have to recline for the afikoman, and if you forget to recline, you got to eat another afikoman if it's not too difficult. Then, okay, all right, then I don't know why I wrote it again. Eat the afikoman before halachic midnight. Okay, now what if the time passed? You forgot the time? You still eat the afikoman. You still eat the afikoman, even if it's 2 o'clock, you eat the afikoman no matter how much it is. What if the kid falls asleep and now you don't know where the afikoman is, or the child refuses to give the afikoman unless you give him a $7,000 present? You tell him, I don't have to use your afikoman, I could use one from the box, and that becomes your strike breaker. Okay, He said, "Okay, listen, I'm willing to give you a $20 present. You know, want more? I just take another matzah. You get nothing." So that usually you win the argument. But you have to, again, has to be shmura matzah. And at this point, you may not eat anything else after the afikoman. The taste of the matzah should be on your lips. You can drink water if you're thirsty after the afikoman. And then we bench, and after benching, you should refrain, really, after benching, besides the wine, you really should refrain from drinking anything, unless it's a great need. You need a little tea or seltzer or apple juice. Mild drinks, okay. You should not be drinking strong drinks and not coffee. I don't know who would want to. You'd want to go to sleep at this point. It's also, even though you can smoke technically on Yom Tov, you shouldn't smoke after the afikoman because you're not going to taste the afikoman. So you want that taste of afikoman on your mouth before you go to bed with that. Okay, now we go to Beirach, the benching. The third cup of wine is poured before the benching. You should wash Mayim Achronim before the benching. If there's three men present, you do a Zimun. If there's an important visitor, he is given the honor. And the one who leads the benching has to hold the cup the entire benching. If there's no leader, then everybody should hold their cup during the benching. Again, when we drink the third cup of wine, men have to recline, but if you don't recline at that, we don't have to drink it over. After the third cup of wine, we refill all the cups, then we fill the cup for Elio and Navi. And the custom is for the leader of the Seder to fill the cup of Elio. It should be a large, beautiful cup. We open the door and say, Shvoch Hamoscha, welcoming Elio. Everyone stands in honor of Elio coming. And many have a custom to leave the cup of Elio covered on the table overnight and use it for Kiddush the next morning. Others pour it back into the bottle. Okay, we're coming to the finish line here. Hallel. Okay, contrary to popular belief, women are obligated to remain at the Seder for the Hallel and the fourth cup of wine. And children that are old enough should be encouraged to do so, if at all possible, but don't make them miserable. We do not recline when we say the Hallel. Rather, again, it's a song showing our gratitude to Hashem. If there's three men present, we say certain parts like we say in Shul, where we say responsively, Hodu Lashem Kitov, or Ana Hashem Hoshiana, like it's done in Shul. Then at the conclusion of the Hallel, we drink the fourth cup of wine. And again, men should recline during the fourth cup, but if you didn't, you don't have to say it again. Now, the last cup, you should make an effort to drink at least 3 ounces of wine. Although every other cup, you can get by with a majority of the cup. But the last one should be 3 ounces in order to facilitate the after blessing on the wine that has to be said afterwards. So if you don't have 3 ounces of wine, it's hard to make the after blessing. And therefore, we do that. And have that in mind, that after blessing applies to all the other wine you drank throughout. Okay, final step, Nirtza, after we sing Chasal Seder Pesach, which is the final part, and all the songs that are after this point were added later on in Jewish history, and you're not obliged to say them. So if you're really tired, stick around for the Hallel. Okay, Hallel's important. And then drink the fourth cup of wine. And if you're totally exhausted, you can go to sleep after that. That you could. But it's a really great thing to sing all those songs if you can. And some also have the custom to sing Shir HaShirim after the Seder because that's the love song between the Jewish people and Hashem. Now here, I don't know if I mentioned it last week, but this is an important point. Tonight is the only night of the year where it is a mitzvah to remain awake as long as possible after the Seder and study the laws of Pesach and continue relating the miracles of the Exodus. Shavuos is only a custom. Staying up Shavuos night, there's nowhere in the Torah that says you stay up Shavuos night. It's a custom. It's a nice custom. We should do the custom if you're a man. But there is no requirement. Pesach, as one of the parts of the Haggadah says, the more you talk about it, the better it is. We bring a story with the 5 rabbis who said it the whole night. Every moment you relate the story of the redemption from Egypt, you are doing a mitzvah. So in an ideal, perfect world, you'd be staying up the whole Pesach night and davening at sunrise with a minyan, which I don't know anywhere locally that does that. That's my dream to do that one day. It's going to be hard to do that. But the point is, that's the time to really stay up. And obviously, when you're overcome by sleep, okay, you fall asleep, and that's fine. And obviously, if you're not going to be able to go to shul, now there's another thing to mention, though. You're going to say up really late, you don't come to shul on time, that's not a good thing either. Okay? Before going to sleep, you don't have to say the full Shema, you only have to say one paragraph of the Shema and the blessing of Hamapil. It is a night of protection, so you don't have to say the full Shema. Second Seder is the same as the first, with only the following differences. Number one, you can't make any preparations at all until 8:26, so it's going to be a much later Seder. If it's Saturday night, which it is this year, you have to put Havdalah into the Kiddush. And then you can be lenient on some of the requirements. You can get by with 15 grams of matzah for the first eating, although the leader still has to eat 30 grams. But a sick or elderly person can be much more lenient on the second night and have 10 grams of matzah. Again, you don't hurry. Some are not so particular to eat the afikoman before midnight on the second night. You can be a little bit more lenient with that. And you can have any type of drink after the afikoman as long as it's not intoxicating. And you can go to bed immediately after the Seder. There, we did it in 1 hour and 2 minutes flat. Okay, very good. Have a wonderful Pesach.
Have a wonderful Pesach.